You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance-off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gilp.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
I'm Chris Ellis.
And I'm Chris Gilpin.
How's it going today, guys?
Good. A little chilly outside.
Yeah.
Not bad.
not too shabby. It's a little cool. It's going to get colder.
Yeah.
Welcome to winter.
I think we need to rearrange how we sit so that we don't end with Chris because you're the softest spoken of us. And so then you take over the natural pause. That comes after the first, whatever.
Right.
So, like, if you sit in the middle, it'll be like, and then you're like, I'm Chris Gilpin, and then Chris Ellis can be like, I'm Chris Ellis, and, you know. But, of course, like, somebody like Adam Bishop isn't here to be like, comics, as soon as we stop. As soon as there's the slightest pause, comics.
Yeah. Oh, hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
you have to start at some point. Yep. So, since you said comics.
Comics.
I was going through the previews, and I saw the Nightwing stuff. Does anybody read Nightwing?
No.
Okay.
Rick Grayson?
Yeah. The Gray Sun. So, they've taken his name, broke it down into two words.
Oh, okay.
And now he's going to become the Gray Sun.
Oh.
And his name is Rick.
Yeah.
I guess they're afraid that, you know, Dick was too
I really have to say that they have done him so wrong over the past 5 years. Like, Dick Grayson has just been deconstructed into oblivion.
Yeah, and now they've taken his name. I mean, at least he's still Nightwing, I guess, but
because I mean, there was the Grayson comic before, where he was like, a super spy or something instead of being Nightwing?
Yeah, I bought the first issue.
Oh, yeah.
And only the first issue. And it wasn't that good.
No.
But it was, I was just kind of looking through and I was like, what happened? Like, what was the transition? What was the writer thinking? Wow, we can't name him Dick anymore. It's not okay. We're going to have to call him Rick. And we're going to spell it with just an R-I-K.
Yeah.
You know, we'll drop the C. He doesn't need that.
Yeah.
Strange.
Well, last episode of Titans I watched.
Is he Rick in there too?
No, he was Dick, but Dick and he and Raven were getting coffees, and the guy was calling it, and he goes, Dirk? And Dick goes, Dick. He goes, what? He's like, never mind.
just give me my coffee.
Better. Yeah, and now he'll be retconned to be Dirk Grayson.
What?
Dirk Grayson's such a much cooler name. Guys.
Well, now, I was just kind of curious if they were going to get away from the Nightwing and, you know, turn him into the Gray Sun. Because that was the way it read in the thing. I'm like, what is going on here? This is weird. Yeah.
Is he still based out of Gotham, or is he...
I don't know. I don't read it. I just caught that, and it caught my attention. I'm like, oh, Rick Grayson? What? Wait a second. What did I miss?
Grayson. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, he had to become the Grayson. Are they reaching?
Why? What about this is needed? Like, I don't understand. Like, it's not... Okay, he's Nightwing.
Yeah.
So that's a step back in the right direction from just being a super spy.
That's true.
But now he's Gray's son.
Mm-hmm. No. Nah. I don't know. I was kind of hoping somebody here was, like, reading it so they could give me a little insight and know what the heck was going on. But apparently I'm not the only one who's not like, meh, Nightwing, yay!
I mean... Nightwing's fine, but I certainly wouldn't start reading with this.
That's well, and it's not even like sure. issue one. We're talking like issue 30-something-ish.
Yeah.
And it's like, yay, welcome to the new Nightwing. It's like, what?
I'm going to have to go look that up when I get home.
I brought some fun stuff, though. So,
Ghost Rider.
This one came out this week, Ghost Rider. And so basically what they've done is they're trying to win back some of the readership from the 90s. So my Ghost Rider is back. So the Ghost Rider that I grew up reading is back. So Dan Ketch is the Ghost Rider, and it's kind of an interesting read. He's kind of fallen into, I don't know, disrepair.
Yeah, he owns a bar now.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently he drinks there more than he works there, but I don't want to get, you know, ruin it for anybody. So anyways, he's back. And as I was reading it, it's like, you know, it's been 30 years since they introduced Danny Ketch. So I was like, it's really been that long. Mm-hmm. Like, am I really?
You look at your,
am I really that old? Like, I mean, my hair is gone.
Gray and balding
like,
heads.
Yeah, it's like my hair's gone, but you know, that was 30 years. So I did some.
It was a good read. I read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it
because it has both Ghost Riders in it.
It does, but you don't see Johnny Blaze's Ghost Rider until the like towards the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's what they've done. Artistically with him, I was really impressed. I don't want to give it away because, you know, people haven't read it, but Johnny Blaze is the king of hell, and this Ghost Rider really fit that kind of look. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I brought along with me tonight my Ghost Rider number one from 1990.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just kind of feeling a little nostalgic, and I was like, oh man. So I pulled it out. And, you know, they really did try and keep it, like, very artistically the same. Like, they've gone back to the spikes on the gloves and, you know, the chain around the... Of course, he's holding it in this one. But, you know, his chain is around his torso and the bike is the same. So it was kind of neat just to see that, you know, they're actually trying to get the guys who used to read... Ghost Rider to read it.
Sometimes there's just no reason to change.
Well,
keep it the same because it's awesome.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. I did like the flaming charger.
Yeah,
I like that. I like the charger as a car, and the fact that this one was on fire made it really cool. But yeah, so I'm kind of glad he's back. It's nice to see. And so. We got number 93. So the readership in the 90s, well, I guess this was early 2000s, was starting to drop off. And Marvel, in their infinite wisdom, canceled it one friggin' issue from completion.
Oh, yeah.
So they canceled it at 93, but they had previews for 94. They had the cover and everything, but they never finished it. For whatever reason, they didn't do it. So 93 became a giant frustration for every Ghost Rider fan out there because it ended and it's like there's no resolution. It was like to be continued and you're like, ah. So about 6 years later, they printed this bad boy and it's Ghost Rider number 94 and they finished the story.
Yeah.
And where, you know, I think in this one, actually, Danny Ketch becomes the king of hell. So, I mean, they did some playing around with it between the end of this one.
But that doesn't make sense. The continuity, Chris, the continuity.
Well, they kind of do whatever. A continuity is fluid.
it's Marvel.
Yeah, yeah. It's somebody went into the past and killed somebody, and now everything is fluid. Yeah. But so anyways, they finished it. And so, I had to have that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was kind of a neat – I kind of like that they finished the story.
Yeah.
Because it's always really annoying when you're reading a book and you're like, yay. And it's like, oh, man, this is really ramping up to something cool. And then it just stops.
Like The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't reading that one. But I was originally like reading Darkness. I don't know if you ever read any of those books.
Oh, not in the Image. Top Cow?
Yeah, Top Cow. Yeah. Yeah. So it's about a hitman, basically. And so the first series was just kind of following along. And then issue 40 came out. And they were just like on a huge story arc and they were working their way up to something really cool. And then it never happened. There was nothing. It was just stopped. And then it was like 5 years later, they came out with series two, like volume two. And it's like, what happened to volume one? What's like, you guys are killing me here.
That was Mark Silvestri. Was that his little baby?
Yeah. I think he was doing the art. I'm not sure who was doing her writing. But I enjoyed that series. It was kind of neat.
So this new series, it seems to me for now it's going to be both of them.
Yeah.
It looks like they're not going to get along eventually.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of weird when they decided that they should be brothers. Because really, like, Johnny Blaze is considerably older, but they kind of made him younger, and his ponytail is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed that. No ponytail, no shotgun. So, no, I thought it was a good read. It was nice to, enough nostalgia that you were like, hey, this is really fun. And mm-hmm. enough kind of, this is where we're going to make you go.
Yeah.
That it was a good read for me. What'd you think?
I liked it. I liked the artwork. I liked the story.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost pulled, you said artwork. That was kind of the reason that they canceled, I think, the first series. You should have seen some of the artwork. I almost brought one. And I don't know, it was a really stupid concept for a cover anyways. It had Howard the Duck, Ghost Rider, and a dinosaur on the cover.
Oh, okay.
And it looked like a 10-year-old aspiring artist decided that they really needed a good cover gig. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. They drew this cover. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where they were headed. And I think that's kind of what shut them down.
Yeah. I read it a lot in the 90s when Mark was Dextera. Where he was drawing.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like him.
Yeah.
I met him at Comic-Con. He was a super fantastic guy too.
Yeah. That's good. So
I'm 100% sure that I've heard you talk about how awful that art is before.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But every once in a while, like, you go back and you look at stuff. And I picked up, it was a Batman book to kind of complete my run just before Nightfall. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember who did the cover. It wasn't somebody who was, like, super popular. But the guy literally copied right down to like the weird lines, the crunchy nose, the weird feet, copied Rob Liefeld. Like it looked exactly like he had drawn the Riddler on this cover, and it was stinking terrible. But I guess that became like a thing, right? Because he was in such high demand. Everybody was trying to copy his art and mm-hmm. like, oh, that's so bad. But
and even like, you know, this is why I always say you should never go with trends. Always go against the trend, because you won't be seen as, you know, just this, I don't know, gross blob when people look back at what something used to be. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when you were showing the covers of the two, the issue number one from the 90s and the issue number one now, while they do have similarities, like you can even look at the new issue number one and be like, you can see how that looks like an homage to the 90s.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like the 90s.
No, no. It's, you know? The flames are more aggressive. There's more lines work and stuff in it. And these ones are very plain and just, you know, it's
like
it's
when you look at the 90s Ghost Rider, yes, the color scheme and just the line art, and like you could just pull up that and just be like, immediately, that's a 90s comic.
Oh yeah,
because that's what they were going for, that's the style, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So buck the trends, kiddos.
It was like Corel Draw was very big. I mean, look at the fade on the front tire. You know, it starts out the orange and goes to the white at the top. It's just like, Corel Draw, I can do this.
I mean, it was probably an actual skill at that point, not something that anybody could do.
That is.
So.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong there. The computer technologies and stuff and the 1990s for art is not the same as it is today. No. Where you can just like pull out your iPad and do whatever you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Like now I could color comics if I tried and practiced instead of, you know, having to be an actual professional at it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I would ever do that, but I'm saying that there's a lot of amateur people who just do it on a computer.
Yeah.
With no actual talent. And then there's people like Donovan Yetzik, who is a coloring phenom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on the Arthur Adams Facebook fan group, and
no.
Yeah. People, some people.
Anybody else surprised at that?
I was going to say an artist, I won't mention his name, but people take his black and white prints, mm-hmm. and they'll color them in themselves. Some of them are pretty good, others not so much. Not so much.
Yeah,
just doesn't look quite right.
Yeah,
but some people do a pretty good job.
And I mean, you see that a lot on Facebook and Instagram, where people just take the line art and do that. And yeah, mm-hmm. you know, like usually people only post it if it's actually good, though.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what somebody thinks is good. It's you know, can be a train wreck for somebody else too. Yeah. So I guess it's kind of that, you know, art is in the eye of the beholder, I guess, but mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know.
Color is in the eye of the beholder. Another reason why I would never do the coloring myself is that I have color issues.
Yeah.
Don't see all the colors as perfectly as other people do. So not going to color that for myself. That's for darn sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Tractor lad has blue grass all around his head.
it's
listen, I'm saving that for season 4. Tractor lad goes to Mars.
Oh man,
runs over somebody up there.
Yeah. All right, what else you got there?
So I brought this one in because I thought it was kind of a neat cover when I first saw it, and it was hailed as the death of Bullseye.
The death of Bullseye.
The death of Bullseye. So it is the introduction and death of Bullseye in Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 15. So Marvel used to do this prototype thing a lot.
Right, yeah.
And so if they had an idea for a character, they would kind of make up one and be like, let's see what people think. And they would just kind of throw it out there and just kind of be like, what did they like it? Did they not like it? You know, they did it with Groot and they've done it, you know, it's just kind of a way to get it out there. And then they kind of go, maybe let's tweak it a little bit mm-hmm. and see what happens. So this one, you know, like the color scheme on it is fantastically wild. You know, he's wearing an orange and purple suit with a giant like red and blue bullseye on his chest, with an orange rifle. So I bought this one and I thought that I'd bring it along tonight, mostly just because it was a prototype for a character that actually was reintroduced with some minor tweaks in Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost brought that, but I didn't. So I just brought this one instead.
Yeah. But, which issue is that? Did you?
131.
No, this one here.
Oh, this one? 15.
Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the 15-cent variant. No, I'm just kidding. But anyways, I just thought I would bring it along just because I thought it would be an interesting conversation piece. Just as, you know, as, I mean, it's Bullseye. They called him Bullseye straight up. You know, he's got the, but they just, I don't know, for some reason, he became a disposable character. And
how'd they kill him?
You know what?
Spoilers.
You haven't read it, have you?
I have not read it.
You just brought it in.
You know what? I bought it for the cover. I won't lie. It has a fantastically cool cover. But you know what? I have so many comics I've never read.
That's a shock.
I'm sure I'm the only comic collector ever that has not read every single one of his comics. But typically, I'm not the guy who buys a cover. You know, I don't have any other Nick Fury comic books, but I saw this one and I had to have it.
Yeah, it's cool.
So it's been in my collection, I don't know, about 10 years, I guess. But yeah, it's kind of cool.
You've had it for 10 years and not read it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I thought you were making it sound like you just bought it because it was cool.
No. This one I've had for a long time.
I have two issues of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. One, actually, that's not true. I only have one, and I bought it off of Chris for like $10. Okay. Do you remember that one you sold me? Like number like 4 or 5 or something?
Oh, yes, I do.
And then I have Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s first appearance.
Oh, okay.
Not like actual Nick Fury, but the Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. first appearance. Yeah.
Nice.
And then, you know, some Sergeant Fury in the Howling Commandos comics, because I was on a big kick with those 5 years ago or so.
Okay.
But yeah, we've talked about it before, because I had mentioned it with like Spider-Woman, how if you read her first appearance in Marvel Spotlight, I think it was, where the origin and everything is completely different than when they relaunch her in her own series.
Yeah.
You know, and it really is like, it was just a throw the spaghetti at the wall situation, right? Yeah. Like, did DC do this as well? Like, I feel like it was way more prevalent at Marvel for all these proto characters and like the idea like of having spotlight series.
Because yeah, I think there was one for Doctor Strange as well, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
It would seem to be very common for Marvel to do that. I don't know what, but DC kind of did sort of the same thing. Like Joker was supposed to be like a one-off, you know. Yeah. In and done, and then for some reason people liked him, and he was really kooky back then, like not like the kind of the dark damaged Joker we have now. I mean, this guy was like goofy.
Yeah,
like he was just really goofy, and for some reason he kind of stuck and resonated, and then we end up with Jared Leto. I don't know where.
Yeah,
kind of the
None of us have seen the new movie, I'm assuming, so we can't segue into that. So
no.
We'll just segue right past it.
Yeah. I would like to see it. But what always kind of makes me shy away from a movie is that they're like, it's going to be an Oscar contender. And I'm like, you know,
that
always makes me nervous, because then it's like, okay, well, how badly did they have to water it down in order for people to actually, you know, like Siskel and Ebert to be like, yay, we like that.
Yeah. 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 Cause I mean, we know he's not getting tossed into a vat of chemicals by Batman at the end.
No.
Right. So it's, there's no Jim Gordon. Oh, there was somebody though. I just read that today.
All that I've read is that there was some references to Thomas Wayne.
Yeah, okay. Thomas Wayne. Yeah, maybe that's.
But yeah,
what
I don't
it
know.
Like on a billboard, you know? Like, is it like so subtle that you're like, if you're not watching, you're gonna miss it?
See, I am. This is a, you know, hot button topic because of what the Joker represents to white males, and allowing him to go crazy and be justified doing it on screen, and how that can result or resonate through society as an excuse to become the Joker when so many people are already keyboard jokers behind their computers, you know? So I remember seeing like an article or whatever, but that there's Oscar buzz for it after the initial whatever press releases, mm-hmm. press screenings. And I was like, okay, if this Joker movie shows a character who's justified in becoming a terrorist because the Joker is a terrorist, mm-hmm. and it's Oscar worthy, like, that feels like they're just now bringing this down to a level where, like, movies like that aren't Oscar worthy. But if this one becomes Oscar worthy, it means because they want it to be Oscar worthy, because they want it to become something huge, so that, you know, all the Ethan Van Sciver's who are mad about diversity and everything that's happening in comics, they would love for this story about a guy who's justified in becoming a terrorist to become something great that they can rally behind.
I don't know. I'm not disagreeing with you. I kind of see, you know, it makes sense. Originally, like, what turns the Joker into the Joker, and I can't remember what book it is, but it's called, like, the storyline is called One Bad Day. And I can't remember what one of the, anyways, but it's called One Bad Day, and basically it just shows, like, it's one day that turns this normal guy who's a comedian into, like, somebody who's, you know, not playing with a full deck anymore, and he's like, you know, goes a little off the rails.
It sounds like the movie.
Yeah. So I don't know how, whether they're hand in hand or kind of what's going on, but I don't know. I'd be interested to see. I heard somebody gave Joaquin Phoenix a hard time on the talk show or something, and it caused all kinds of problems. I don't know.
They've already shut down some theaters because of the threats. And
yeah, that's the thing too, right? Because there was a shooting at a Batman screening. Yeah. And so I was reading an article where, like, this theater manager said they, you know, now they're having armed police officers at the theater because they're afraid that because there's already a history of there being a violent act at a Batman movie, and now you've got this movie that could possibly be encouraging people to be violent, and people are going, and, you know, they also put in a rule, no costumes, no masks, nothing, because, like, that's just literally the society we're in now. Yep. That you can't have a mask on without being seen as a, you know, a mass murderer, and or you're going to be a spree killer if you've got a mask on, and mm-hmm. and it's just where we're at. And yeah, so, like, the movie itself, they're afraid, is going to encourage and incite violence. Mm-hmm. So, and what you were describing, Chris, sounds like, was that just from The Killing Joke?
I think maybe that's what it
sounds like,
was.
The plot of The Killing Joke, the Joker's trying to give Gordon his bad day and turn him into a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because all it takes is one bad day to become a bad guy. I don't think that's, you know, that works in real life. Sure, it works on a comic book page, yeah. But that's, I think you're right. I think it was The Killing Joke.
I'll have a 40-page essay on the topic to post online later.
Nice.
Have you guys watched Pennyworth at all?
No.
No.
It's, speaking of Thomas Wayne, because Thomas Wayne's in it.
Okay.
So is Martha Kane. I think that's her maiden name, Kane.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, because I think so.
Isn't Arkham? Isn't, like, she's related to the Arkhams, though, right? At least in...
Somehow, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But... it's very violent.
All right.
Very, very violent. I'd recommend it. It's an interesting look at Alfred as a young man.
Oh, so they're giving Alfred a backstory, are they?
Yeah. Yeah. Shows him in the army, and then he flashbacks to different scenes in the army.
Okay.
But it's mostly about him. I don't even know what year it is, but it's got to be the 50s or something, 60s. Where he's a young man, and he's got his old army buddies, and they're forming, like, a security type business in somewhere in London. But he does some stuff that I'm like, why would he do that? Like, It's like he kills. It's hard for me to say what it is, but it just took me by surprise. But there's a lot of violence in it.
Okay.
But it's a good show. It's an interesting take on Alfred. Hmm.
Do we need interesting takes on Alfred Pennyworth, the butler of the Waynes? That's the topic.
That's what I always wonder.
We absolutely don't.
Yeah.
This is just the scraping of the bottom of the barrel of the Batman mythos try to find and create and force something.
Yeah.
Like it's he never in any of the comic books have I read has it been implied that he's some sort of like super secret agent or like anything other than a guy who's served the Waynes as a butler and a father figure for Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why do they have to do this?
I don't know. I thought the same thing. Like I wasn't going to watch it, and then Martin said it was pretty good. So I watched the first episodes and I was hooked on it.
I think it's kind of it's kind of like Gotham, right? Like yeah. nobody really cares about Bruce Wayne as a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, they managed to make a pretty decent and a pretty well-followed TV show. But nobody really was like, oh, man, I just really wish somebody would write something about an 11-year-old Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And then drop every single villain in it that they possibly can that's 20 years older than him.
Yeah.
Like, Smallville works because Superman has always had his powers. Therefore, yeah. Superman in high school, even if it's practically a soap opera at some points, it's still an actual concept that we've already seen and known.
Yeah.
Like, Superboy is a concept, you know, but Bruce Wayne, not the Batman. Yeah, like, you know, it's just, and I don't know. I don't have time for that. I just don't have time for that, nor do I care.
Well, and that's kind of, but I think it was Gotham that kind of made Alfred kind of be a badass. Like, up until then, he was always, like, an old guy.
Yeah.
Like, any of the movies, like, even the TV show, like, he must have been 90 years old in the TV show, which was really funny because, you know, he dressed up as Batman to be Batman, and nobody noticed that it was a 90-year-old man. And then even in Tim Burton's, he was, like, considerably older.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of like Aunt May. Every time they do a movie or an incarnation, he gets younger and younger. And like now he's like, you know, Sergeant Fury, runs around and, you know, killing people. I mean, I haven't seen it, but.
And I think that's more the basis of this Pennyworth, is more that Gotham character as opposed to the old man that we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
But
like, you know what makes it so great when the Batcave is under siege from some sort of, from like, you know, like the one specifically I'm thinking about is like the Black Hand from like the Grant Morrison run or whatever, you know, like the Batcave's under siege and Alfred is standing against bad guys as a normal human being, old man who just loves Bruce Wayne and loves the family, and he would do anything, he would die for them with no training, with nothing, and he's, you know, telling off some super villain and trying to do his best to stop them. And those are the moments when you read and you're like, I bleeping love this guy. Like, this is amazing. But if he was a ex-Navy SEAL, who cares?
Yeah.
That takes everything that's good about the character away from him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's I don't know, it just takes the heart out. And now it's just like, well, he's in the military, so he can do anything. Yeah. Let's set up situations to make him do that.
Yeah. And again, who cares? It was kind of like when I saw Krypton was coming out, I'm like, it blows up. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's a small part of the backstory. Like, Superman is only, what, hours, days, maybe a week old when his parents drop him in the ship and fire him off.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then 15 years later, they're like, oh, yeah, his cousin, too. Oh, got him. And then they're like, who else can we chuck off this planet every once in a while? Well, yeah, they left at the same time. Yeah, 10 seconds before he did. And but yeah, no, the planet blows up. So anything that happens before Superman leaves the planet, like, they're not superpowered on the planet. They're just like average people like us under their political different colored sun.
Is this where we bring up the Phantom Menace and what politics in Star Wars did to ruin the franchise?
No, we don't talk about the Phantom Menace. So another show I stopped watching for a while and just got back into was Preacher.
Preacher.
Okay.
I don't know.
I've only seen like the first five episodes. I have season one on Blu-ray. I've watched the first five episodes twice and then just got stopped for whatever reason. So...
Have you read or seen the...
No, I've seen previews and stuff like on... But I've never actually sat down and watched it. Now, I know it's Garth Ennis.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's probably uber violent and very violent. Crazy. Because that's just the kind of guy that Garth is. I mean, he's got a very twisted imagination on how to kill people.
Yeah. But when your main cast includes God, Jesus, a clone of Jesus, or an ancestor of Jesus, I can't remember, and Hitler. Okay. You know, not to mention the preacher and his ex-girlfriend and the vampire. And
so this is season three? Or that you're
five.
Watching? It's on season five?
I think
wow.
So.
No, yeah, the series did run for a long time. Like, it was over 200 issues or something, I think.
I think it only went up to, like, 93.
It was 93?
Because I bought a whole whack load off of Davis Dewsbury and
okay.
It goes up to, like, 90-something.
Yeah, because when I went back to it a couple weeks ago, I was like, oh, okay, season four, I'm like three episodes left, so did that. And season five already had like six or seven or eight episodes out, so
66 issues, not including spinoffs or
yeah, because it did a couple spinoff and stuff. Yeah. Now, like, I wish, okay, the way my life works now, I actually have some time to watch TV, so. But I've been watching, like, stupid things. Hmm. And, you know, I was thinking earlier that I should, like, try to watch Titans or something like that. But then I was like, no, I'll just watch seven episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine instead. You know? Because, like, Titans isn't on Netflix in Canada, right? It's, you have to get it through Crave or Hulu or something.
I thought it's on Netflix. I think it's on Netflix now.
I thought that it was on one of the other.
It aired on whatever DC's channel or streaming is, but it was on Netflix. I think I watched like the first two or three shows, but I don't know. My kids were around, and it was not it's not a TV show to be watching with children around.
No.
So we didn't really watch a whole lot of it, but
I watched the first episode, but I watched it on my phone, which usually means I didn't watch it on Netflix because I would have watched that on TV.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But it is possible that I wasn't allowed to watch the TV, and so I was just watching on my phone because somebody else was watching something else on television.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't know. Superhero TV shows don't really do it for me at all.
No.
Not at all. I have no interest. Not even the movies. Like, I just have no interest. And I don't know why. Like, I feel like a half a man in this room, you know, because I haven't seen any of the last, like, five Marvel movies. I haven't watched a DC movie since Batman versus Superman.
Okay.
So...
Well, if you're going to stop,
there's a reason you stop.
Does that include non-superhero comic book movies like The Boys or Preacher?
Well, like as I said, I've watched five episodes of The Preacher. Haven't watched The Boys because it's Amazon Prime. So can't watch that one. Haven't watched. Yeah, I just, you know, like I didn't watch Umbrella Academy.
Yeah.
Didn't watch any of the other ones that were, mostly because a lot of the ones on Netflix, I get ridiculed for watching the trailers.
Oh,
that looks stupid. Like, okay. But, you know.
Well, this may sound a little off topic, but it actually is comic book related. So We've been watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids love it. They think it's hilarious. And, you know, for a show that was like a comedy show, it really was edgy. And, yeah. and, you know, it really yeah. did hit on some serious, yeah. like, racial issues and stuff. A very important show for its time. And even now, I think people could still learn a lot from it. But anyways, there's a scene, and Will and Carlton are yelling at each other. And the camera kind of swings by the wall. And up on the wall are four posters of the Milestone comics from DC. It was Static, Icon, Blood Syndicate, and Hardware on the wall. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, it actually had, you know, and even I think at the time, like, they were not high published series. They were black characters done by black artists, black writers. It was actually, you know what? I bought the series. I have all of Blood Syndicate. I thought it was really cool. I've got like the, you know, 20 or 25 issues or something of Hardware. Like, very cool comic characters, like, just fantastic series, good writing, great art. And I was like, oh my goodness, they're on the wall on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I was just like, wow.
Was that in one of their rooms or somewhere else?
Yeah, in the pool house. Yeah, Will's going to go away with his dad on a road trip. And so Carlton's like popping his hats off the wall. And as the camera kind of swings around, you see it's not mentioned or anything. No. But there's the four posters right there. And I'm like, holy crap, I have those four posters because they came in the bagged issues, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, that's kind of impressive.
Yeah. And now to ruin it for you, that Warner Brothers owns Fresh Prince and DC Comics, so that's why they're up there.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
They're trying to promote them.
But then again, at the time, they were really probably the only black characters that didn't necessarily have black in their name. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Marvel was always good with, like, hey, here's the Black Panther. Yeah.
Like, Black Lightning.
Yeah,
not just the... It was for some reason they liked to do that. I'm not sure why, but yeah, like, it was Hardware and Blood Syndicate, and you know, they all had like cool names like Tech Nine and Holocaust and yeah, I know. Dan's shaking his head at me.
I need a shaking my head sound so everybody can hear when I shake my head. Speaking of, here's a segue. Speaking of comic book imprints and stuff, Joe Hill has a comic book imprint coming from DC Comics.
Yes.
Joe Hill, son of Stephen King. Mm-hmm. Pretty decent horror writer. Yeah. Also, adaptation coming to Netflix, I believe, of his series Lock and Key.
Oh, okay.
So I'm excited for the series and like reading his comics. Mm-hmm. His books. Sorry, I haven't read any of his comics yet. Here's a spoiler. I probably won't read anything put out through DC for this one, only out of laziness, because, you know, I just don't get to the comic store ever to actually pick up new comics.
I pre-ordered that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What one's that?
That one is a Basketful of Heads.
All right.
Yeah. So it actually looks quite interesting to me. I don't know. I only know just like bits and pieces about it. So the Basketful of Heads, the guy is, I don't know if he's actually like an axe murderer or whatever, but when he takes somebody's head, he puts it in the basket and they're still alive. Like, the head still talks and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So it's I don't know. It's kind of interesting. So
I kind of really like the art. There's a couple pages of art up on here, and it has a like Silver Age feel to it.
Yeah.
Like, it almost looks like a Silver Age comic, and that's pretty cool. So I'm excited for that. And I will, you know what? I will try to read this and maybe buy it in trade or buy it digitally and read it. But yeah.
See the flag underneath the D there? That's an eyeball.
Yeah, there's an eye poking out of the basket. So the imprint is called Hill House Comics. And yeah, Joe Hill presents Hill House Comics, Basket Full of Heads.
And there's about four, five, six books that they're like, not just in the Basket Full of Heads. But there's actually like a bunch of miniseries that are going to be running off of that. I think there's about six of them. that eventually he, like, they're going to be kind of running.
This could be huge for DC, though.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, rewind 2 years, and Sam and I are just exclusively talking about horror comics we're reading from Image. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if DC can bring those kind of comics, because it's a black line, mm-hmm. black label series, so it can be a little more mature. If DC can bring those kind of comics in-house, they'll get readers like me and Sam who were reading Image comics, horror comics instead.
For sure. Yeah.
And, you know, that's because that's something definitely not in the DC wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So this could be huge. And Joe Hill is a, you know, I wouldn't say he's necessarily a household name the same way his dad is, but, like, he's definitely known as a big horror writer.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And I think that's why he calls himself Joe Hill. Like, he doesn't want to be
He doesn't want to be Joe King.
Right. Because
joking.
Yeah.
Just joking.
But so. Not only that, you don't want to be, like, known as the son of Stephen King, because immediately they're going to try and compare your works. And obviously he's not his dad. And I don't know, his dad is... got some pretty messed up ideas. But you know, so
also it's and like the thing too is, like, if you look at, like, musicians who are the sons of famous musicians and they're forced into it because everybody's like, oh, your dad's famous, you should sing too, and you're like, okay, I guess, you know, like, you know, by having a different name, you know, certainly lets you stand on your own two feet and see if you're actually good.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. And I kind of like that they've got the black label. I think, I really wish that their first book was not a Batman book.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they should have went with somebody who was already on the, like, on edgy, like, as a standard book. And let that try first before they, because, I mean, really, all of Black Label stuff is all Batman. Mm-hmm. But they've got so many characters like Deadshot and Deathstroke that would be kind of perfect for this kind of, like, you know, blood and guts kind of books, right?
But,
like,
would anybody care?
I don't know. But all it did for Batman was make people angry, and then they toned the book down.
Yeah. And everything, but, like, I'm reading the Superman, which is the black label.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's under DC Black, because it's not.
It's not edgy.
No.
Like, it's not. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get it. But.
Yeah, but, like, obviously from a marketing standpoint, DC is, they launched Black Label with Batman, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, you know there's a meeting of the head of Warner Brothers and the head of DC, and, like, okay, guys, we're gonna pitch this, like, edgy label, but we're gonna start with Deadshot. Is Deadshot, is that Batman?
Yeah.
No, he's a different character. He does this and this and this. Okay, can you work Batman into that? Can I see the script? Just crosses out Deadshot in the entire script and puts Batman. There you go. Oh, and put his Wang in there too.
And then let's take it out. Because, like, they wanted an edgy adult book. And then when they gave them an edgy adult book, they went, oh, man, that's too edgy and too adult for an edgy adult book that, you know, has a mature label on it. And it was like, I don't know, man. If you put an R on an R-rated movie, that tells you something.
Yeah.
One, there's going to be, like, a lot of people dying and being eviscerated. Like, they're not just going to die. Like, you're going to see stuff.
Yeah.
And, or you're going to, there's going to be a lot of nudity and tons of swearing. Like, that's when you buy an R-rated product, like a, you know, an R-rated movie, you get what you pay for. Like,
that is absolutely not true. How often as a 13-year-old were you mad when you watched an R-rated movie and it had nothing in it that was worth being R-rated? Well, I was mad a lot.
Like, if the original R rating...
I'm trying to,
like,
give Adam a run for the perv title here.
if they had more than 5 F-bombs in the movie, it pretty much got an R rating. Like, that was just kind of the standard. But now, like, the stuff that they show in an R-rated movie, like, I don't know. We just watched the new Rambo. My brother and I went and saw it. And some of the stuff that guy does to other people is absolutely disgusting. And, you know, well, 20 years ago, the technology to be able to do that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the, you know, the blood and guts shooting out of people and the CGI to make it look good wasn't there. But, man, it was crazy, some of the stuff that happened in that movie. But I don't know, like, back to the what happens in the comics. Like, I don't know, when Marvel had their Max books, you knew what you were buying. Like, you weren't going to be, like, it was mature for a reason. And it didn't matter whether it was, like, Guns of the West or whatever, or Punisher. Like, you knew that something bad was going to happen to people, and there was a reason that it was mature and not just, like, under their other label. And this one seems kind of watered down.
Well, I read today that there's going to be another Harley Quinn series. Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey, which sounds just like the movie. But they're going to do it under the Black Label, which I just, I mean, I can see if they do it right. Like, Harley Quinn's crazy. Like, right? She can do stuff if she wanted to, but I just don't see them doing that. And I don't get it, but
anyways. I don't know. And I think maybe something like these Joe Hill books will push the envelope and actually be like a mature like, how do you have a book called A Basket Full of Heads and not be kind of on the outside of, like, you know, the pushing the limits on, like, the blood and guts and you know, obviously he's carrying an axe, he's going to be taking those heads off of people.
But then again, as I said a few minutes ago, the art looks very Silver Age-ish.
It's very cheery. Know?
And, like, there's not any, in the first six pages posted, there's not a single bit of gore, you know? So it is possible to tell a great horror story that's not blood and guts.
But then does it need to be the Black Label?
Is the Black Label, like, maybe you're just thinking about the Black Label too, like, literally. Because, you know, it could just be now maybe it's just an imprint for stuff they don't want in continuity.
And that could be very well, you know, like the kind of the Vertigo line. But even the Vertigo was kind of more of like an adult kind of nature comics. Like, you know, there wasn't like nudity in everyone, but there were words in those books that you didn't pick that were you'd never see in a Batman or Superman book. You know, like, and were they F-bombs? No, but they were, you know, like, you know, outside of the common language, right? You know, they had bad swears in them.
Bad words.
not everything has to be Garth Ennis.
No.
Well, and that's, I don't mean that it has to be that, but if you're looking at, like, an imprint that's kind of for... And Garth Ennis might be the extreme on that one. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, I was so disappointed after Batman. Like, we have an edgy book and now we're going to edit it. And that's never going to be in any other books ever. You know. Now, what if they had shown Alfred's? Would they have left it? Like, if it was somebody other than Batman.
How old is he? Is he in the Secret Service? Or is he just... Did he fall in the shower?
I've fallen and I can't get up. Old Ninja Alfred.
All right, I brought some stuff to talk about. Briefly. Okay, I've got two books. The first is, I don't think I've brought this one before, but I'm pretty sure I didn't talk about it because we ended up talking about other stuff. The Burning Black, The Legend of Black Shuck from Mark Allard Will and Ryan Howe. And Mark and Ryan are both CCBA boys. And this is the story of the demon dog that inspired the Hounds of Baskerville. And... It's based in England, and it's the story of a devil dog that comes to destroy a village. And there's nothing in basically the what I just told you gives you the entire plot of the book. And it's a good read. I love Mark. He's a fantastic guy and great writer. And My favorite part of this book, though, is after the book is over, when like there's literally like they draw up him researching the book and talking about the book straight to the audience, breaking the fourth wall.
Oh, yeah.
And like talking about different bits and pieces of the factual legends. And that was actually my favorite part, was reading like the true stuff that they know about what happened. And different, yeah, like just different stuff about what might have happened, because this is all from like the 1600s or earlier.
Yeah.
So I really like that one. Really good read. It's from Renegade Arts Entertainment. Rated M for mature because there's some blood.
I saw somebody without a head there.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a good one that I picked up. I supported the Kickstarter for this one.
Okay.
Got this in a t-shirt, but I would definitely pick this up from Mark if I ever saw him at a convention. And then the other book that I brought in, I actually started reading this one 6 months ago, March. So close, because I bought it at the Toronto Comic Con in March. It's Flip, from Jack Briglio, who does a lot of the stuff in here. He edited it. It's a anthology series of like weird sort of the idea is take a normal concept and flip it. So like there's one where it's all short stories. There's one like where, you know, you're only allowed to be married for 7 years, and like they take different stories, different ideas, and they flip it. And yeah, it's an anthology with different artists and different stuff going on there. And so, yeah, I read like the first chapter in March and then put it on my shelf and didn't read it. And then he posted that volume 2 is coming out. And I was like, oh, I never finished volume 1. So I dug it out of the pile and read it all before the show tonight. I sat on the couch. I sat on the couch ignoring the television and read the whole thing in about an hour.
Nice.
And it's pretty good. Yeah, it's an anthology. There's a few different writers and different artists and stuff on there, but it's definitely worth taking a read through. It was a lot of fun. Cool. So that's what I read. All Canadian content-ish for me there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
I'm kind of sad that the company that I read almost all of my Canadian content from is really not producing any new print Canadian content. So that kind of makes me sad.
Are you talking about Chapter House?
Because you
would be wrong, my friend.
Oh, yeah?
You're not a member of the Chapter House Facebook group, are you?
I am, and I saw
that
they...
Did you not see that giant post with all the pictures?
I did, but when previews was going through, they didn't have anything.
Yeah, well...
Well, they had a couple of trade paperbacks, 4 or 5, I think, but... So, yeah...
Well, this is getting out the actual trades of everything that's already been out.
Yeah.
And according to insider Marty, who was sitting at the Chapter House table, he said something along the lines of good things are coming.
Good.
I can't remember exactly what he said, but
I saw he had a few books that never made print, like the rest of Captain Canuck Year One and Phantoma.
Yeah,
volume 2 or season 2. So, if they're going to be, you know, producing these books, I'm pretty excited about that because I really enjoyed them. But
yeah, I saw Andrew Thomas posted a picture of like 10 different trades today, maybe even more than that, and I just went, "Oh, my wallet hurts! Like I need all
crying.
Of those. I want all of those." Because I don't enjoy reading single issues really at all.
Oh, no?
No, so...
I like my floppies. I don't know.
I buy them, but I won't read them.
I like them because it's a lot less time commitment.
Mm-hmm. True.
I can just grab one and go.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's about all the time we've got for this episode. So, as always, check us out on Google Play, iTunes, or Stitcher, and we will be back next week.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like The Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?
Level check for Eugene Levy CFFF promo. Take three.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Good level?
Yep.
Bobby Bittman here. I always listen to Trent Radio 92.7. I love this guy. I really do.
You do one more of those?
Sure. What was wrong with that one?
Nothing. The level was a little high.
Okay. Hi, this is Bobby Bittman. When I'm in the Kawarthas, I listen to Trent Radio 92.7 FM.